We'd like to thank all the Moody's for and the coming. Our humble board and thank His Holiness Prashad Maharaj for coming to enlighten us on this auspicious day of last year. And many other auspicious appearances of this day. His Holiness Prashad Maharaj, key.
Reminding us of Lord Krishna's statement to Narada Muni after he was searching for him all day. Finally found him. But Krishna said, I have to go now. He said, where do you have to go? And then at last he asked him, but where can I find you? And he said, you cannot find me in the hearts of the yogis. Narada said, I already looked there. You cannot find me in the hearts of the gyanis. I already looked there. Still didn't answer his question, where can we find you? Wherever the devotees congregate to chant the holy names, I will be there. So, the last series of discussions needed to be continued regarding Canto 10, Chapter 26, which is Wonderful Krishna, a term Srila Prabhupada was very fond of. When just before Govardhan Puja, 1977, he was concluding his earthly pastimes, and a very grave, dark atmosphere preceding Srila Prabhupada's imminent disappearance and separation was interspersed with episodes of sweetness, intimacy, and even a little humor, as in his transcendental desire to go for a picnic on Govardhan Hill just a few days before he departed this world. And he explained during that episode that I was loitering alone in the streets of New York. No one cared. No one was interested. But due to Wonderful Krishna and his arrangements, this movement has expanded. So this chapter, Srila Prabhupada entitled Wonderful Krishna. So, in honor of Gopastami, you know, in this world, people take graduation so seriously. I've heard devotees, you know, they travel all over the world to attend their children's graduations. But today is a graduation ceremony. It's when Krishna graduated from being a calf herd boy and became a full-fledged cow herd boy. So, this chapter, Wonderful Krishna, which is followed by Mother Surabhi and Indra offer prayers. It ends with the verse, which is like a synopsis of the chapters preceding and following. Indra became angry when his sacrifice was disrupted, and thus he caused rain and hail to fall in Gokul, accompanied by lightning and powerful winds, all of which brought great suffering to the cowherds, animals, and women. When Lord Krishna, who is by nature always compassionate, saw the condition of those who had only him as their shelter, he smiled broadly and lifted Govardhan Hill with one hand, In this way, he protected the cowherd community. May he, Sri Govinda, the lord of the cows and the destroyer of Indra's false pride, be pleased with us. Purport. The word Indra means lord or king. Thus, in this verse, Krishna is called Indra Gavan, the lord of the cows. In fact, he is the real Indra, the real ruler of everyone. And the demigods are merely his servants, representing his supreme will. Om Agana Telabandhasya Ganajna Shalakaya Chakshuran Malitamina Tasme Sri Guruve Namaha. When Lord Krishna instructed the cowherds to worship Govardhan and worship the cows, he was guiding the world in how to properly worship all the demigods, because they all reside in the body of the cow. But Indra wasn't appreciating that because of his false pride. But it's very significant that Krishna's name, Govinda, was given at his coronation by Indra. And if you look at the context, it's even more significant, because the 7-day, what would have been an apocalypse, which threatened the whole universe with total destruction, which for the Brijabasis was just 7 hours of euphoria and joy and celebration. There was a storm of another type going on below Govardhan as the rasas were interacting in marvelous ways. But it was Indra alone who experienced that 7-day period as 7 millenniums of intensive suffering, anxiety, grief, and a terrible headache. After that unbearable anguish, he could not even confide in his wife. He could not connect with his spiritual master, because his offense was so grievous. And it was, he approached Brihaspati and Brahma, and they told him that you can't approach Krishna unless you take shelter of someone who is very dear to him, who will intercede on your behalf. And that was Surabhi, who approached Krishna as he was wandering around Govardhan, surveying the damage to any surrounding regions and looking to see if anybody needed any help. And Surabhi approached him and offered her prayers. And she said, "There's somebody behind me who's very fearful and afraid to come before you. But he's actually a nice devotee, and right now he's very repentant. Please bestow your mercy upon him." So then Krishna encouraged him, and he said, it was a favor to you that I relieved you of that mountain of false pride. Is your anger now gone? Please speak very honestly and openly with me." And then Indra began the Abhishek, coronating Gopal as Govinda, after what to Indra with 7 millenniums of extreme torture. His conclusion was that Krishna is the real Indra. He's the Indra of the cows, therefore Govinda, which means he who gives pleasure to the cows, the land, and the senses. That was Indra's realization at the completion of Govardhan Puja. So today Krishna graduated from being a calf herd boy and became a full-fledged cow herd boy. But when he and he went to school later, actually, because, you know, when he went to Mathura, because he was invited, the king is holding a wrestling match. And that sounded appealing to Krishna because he likes to wrestle. But Akura told him, no, this wrestling is not going to be like some leela, or it's not going to be fun. He has massive, powerful rakshasas. And then Krishna looked at Balaram and said, big fat wrestlers? And he thought that was even more funny. He said, he's got this fierce mad elephant. And Krishna looked at Balaram and said, an elephant. And he became very eager. Anyway, he went. And then when he, after killing Kamsa, approached Vasudeva and Devaki, and all they could do is, they were stunned with reverence, because it appeared that their son was actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, based on how he had just killed Kamsa, that nobody but the Lord could do. And then after killing that mighty Rakshasa, Krishna and Balaram just began to cry because their mother and father weren't receiving them with hugs and kisses. They just started to cry. And that evoked the Madhurya, which totally eclipsed the Aishwarya. And they embraced him and hugged him and But after that, they said, well, Krishna, you know, you never went to school. So they asked Nanda Maharaj that, you know, he really ought to go to Gurukul now, after he already graduated and became a cowherd boy. They asked that he go to Gurukul. So just to please Vasudeva Devaki, he did. But then, you know, the Jadus in Mathura became so attached, they bound Krishna with the ropes of duty, because reports were coming from the east that when Jarasandha heard from his daughters who married Kamsa how Krishna had killed the king, he was assembling vast armies from different lands to attack Mathura. And Krishna also knew it wouldn't be one attack, it would be, you know, 17 times, each with a larger, more formidable force. And after annihilating Mathura, they would go on to Braj. So he had to stay in Mathura, bound by the Jadus with ropes of duty. But Krishna wasn't happy. Mathura was like a wasteland to him. It was like a desert in which he yearned for the oasis. And in Mathura and later in Dwarka, he was feeling so much separation from the cows and the cowherds. You know, all through the night he'd be calling cows in his dreams. And the Mathura Vasis and later the queens in Dwarka, they realized that he's not even with us. You know, he's with us in form only, but his heart is still in Braj. So while Krishna was in Mathura, longing for the cows, You know, he sent Uddhava, he sent Balaram. But he wouldn't go himself. This was very displeasing to Balaram and Uddhava. And Uddhava kept telling him, I promised the Brijabasis that I would bring them, and you promised me you would go. So, when what happened? And Krishna said, well, he knew it has to be soon before Jarasandha attacks. So, and then Krishna was really concerned about his gopa friend Lota, who was still waiting on the outskirts of Braj in the forest. You know, he was the last one to wave goodbye to Krishna on the outskirts of Braj Mandala Parikrama. And Krishna was thinking, he's still in the forest waiting for me to return. I must go back. And while he was pondering, he heard wings of a very large bird flapping outside his palace window. He thought, is this Garuda? And he looked out and saw a large white swan land on the perch that he had for his peacock. And the swan folded his wings and looked at Krishna very carefully. Is this the person I've been directed to deliver the message to? And he saw that he fits the requirements. And then he spoke. That's why he's named Hansaduta. He's the messenger. And first he said, you know, don't fault anybody for confiding in a bird, but where would a girl who is, you know, stricken with grief at the plight of her princess not turn to express her heart? So I'm the messenger of that best friend of the princess. And then he began Lalita's message. Krishna, you remember that little brown calf that you personally fed with lotus stems when you were a child? She's grown up now and she has her own calf. And remember the Vasanti vine that you married to the mango tree? The vine is grown now, but it only cries tears of honey. And seeing that makes us all cry. And then after the drama of Lalita's message, now hear the words of the princess, opening with the stanza, Krishna, do you remember those two wretched syllables, Radha? And then Krishna just broke into tears. Remember, he sustained his life only by that name, the shelter of that name. And then Lalita explained that she doesn't know what to say in the many letters that she sent to you. She wrote one letter beginning with, Govinda, I love you dearly, which she concluded that that's too light. So she wrote another one, I can't live any longer without you. Well, that's too heavy. Krishna, when will you come back? But that places him under my control, which is not proper. And then Krishna came to understand why he had not received any letters from Braj. While the table before him was covered with letters smudged with his tears, it had become inept. Illegible and couldn't be sent. So after the swan concluded his narration of the message from Vrindavan, he swooped down to Jamuna, drank some water, and then returned to Braj. And then Krishna told Uddhava, "Now we must go." So when Uddhava drove Krishna back to Vrindavan, everything in Braj just blossomed into its full-blown splendor as the expression of every flower and leaf and tree and deer and bird, the expression of their love for Krishna. But when the cows saw two cloud-like figures riding on a chariot on the horizon, their eyes were fixed. And when the breeze shifted and carried to their nostrils the fragrance of Govinda's body, the whole herd of Nanda Maharaj, they ran and escaped the control of all the cowherd men and boys. And at first they were upset, but when they looked and they saw who the cows were running to greet, they dared not consider, "Has Govinda returned?" So when the cows surrounded the chariot and it was rocking back and forth, Krishna got off and expanded himself to appear at the side of each and every cow, asking them all simultaneously, "O mothers, did you miss me as much as I missed you?" And all together they replied, And then Krishna again boarded the chariot. And he directed Uddhava, just as he later directed Arjuna, how to navigate, not the sea of Kauravas, the sea of cows, because he saw one Gopa who had dark complexion and wore a yellow dhoti and a red turban and had a special flute and an ornate buffalo horn. It was his dearmost Sri Dhamma, the same Sri Dhamma who Krishna would ride on his shoulders, and Sri Dhamma would cry every time Gopal was out of sight. And he jumped down and grabbed him by the shoulders and said, "Sri Dhamma, it's me, I'm back." Sri Dhamma couldn't, he was just paralyzed, his body just went limp. He said, "It's really me." And it was only when Gopal embraced into his heart and he felt both their hearts beating in perfect rhythm that he dared to believe. And then he shouted in joy, "Gopal has returned, Gopal's back, he's come back to Vrindavan." And all the gopas burst into a spontaneous kirtan, chanting, "Govinda has returned." And then they chanted verses in praise of Uddhava. Uddhava's a true hero and a real saint because he's kept his promise and returned our Govinda. And playing their flutes and buffalo horns and dancing, and all the cows began dancing and kicking their hind legs in the air, and it was a sign of great jubilation. And Nanda and Jashoda with hearts throbbing. And when Krishna fell at Jashoda's feet and bathed them with her tears, and she in turn bathed him with her breast milk. And Nanda Maharaj, when he embraced Krishna, he couldn't believe he's back. He had to hold him out at arm's length and look, and then embrace him again. And he said, and Gopal told him, "Father, it's true, I have returned." And then there was great festivities in Nanda's palace that night. But on the bank of the Jamuna, where the original letter had originated, an earlier letter sent by the wind to Mathura asking, "When will that day come when all my friends approach from all sides and tell me Govinda has returned?" And when they all approached her, and said, it's true, he's returned. She hadn't decorated herself. For those many years, Lalita had the blue sari and the gold hoop earrings ready, and the Manjaris decorated her just as Krishna liked to see her. And she wanted to run to him, but Lalita's firm hand held her back and said, it's not proper for you to run to him. Send him a message that he must come to you. And Radha pleaded with Lalita, but she was firm in her resolve. So after all the festivities, late that night, when Mother Yashoda placed Krishna into bed and sang lullabies composed of his beautiful pastimes of the days before, and his eyes fluttered closed, then she walked very softly to the door and looked back once again, and his eyes were closed. Then she shut the door, and Gopal jumped up and ran out and went to the Kunj for the reunion. And that's when Srimati Radharani cursed the ecstatic symptoms which inhibited her reception of Govinda. She was just stunned. And he broke the silence. He repeated the message he sent with Uddhava. Separation from me is not possible at any time, place, or under any circumstance, because I'm the all-pervading super soul. It's not what they wanted to hear. So he said, there is nothing in all creation equal or comparable to our love. That's what they wanted to hear. So Srimati still could not speak. She just motioned to Govinda to sit. And he very meekly obeyed and sat at her side. And in the ensuing silence, the only sound to follow was his tears falling upon her feet. And after a short exchange of words, because they couldn't spend the night in talk, because all arrangements and all paraphernalia was arranged for Rasalila, this was the first night of Kartik when Krishna returned. And it was that night that when the gopas saw Krishna returning with the herd of cows, they thought, they forgot that he had ever left. So every night during Kartik, Krishna would meet the gopis for Rasalila under the clear, beautiful Kartik moon. Until the last night of Kartik, when, in the midst of Rasalila, Krishna left with Radha as usual. And he took her to a beautiful mountain, decorated with lakes full of swans and lotuses and kirtan of the most sweetly singing birds. And as they were seated on a rock, exchanging loving words, she saw on the distant shore a sage in meditation, oblivious to their presence. And she said, who is that? And Krishna said, that's Ribhu Muni. He's been performing tapasya for 66,000 years, not eating or drinking anything. And Krishna called to him, Ribhu Muni, but he was so wrapped in internal consciousness he could not reply. But when Krishna withdrew himself from the heart of the sage, and in the anguish of separation, he opened his eyes and saw before him Radha and Krishna. And he worshipped Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Radha as Krishna's most beloved, a mood just opposite that of the gopis. So Krishna called to him, and he entered into the form of the Lord. But then Krishna called him out, and he again appeared before the Lord. And as a celestial chariot came to return him to Upper Golok, the body he left behind melted into a river. And Srimati asked Krishna, why did he melt into a river? He said, that is the effect of prema, which melted his heart. And he chose to become a river to beautify this mountain and forever proclaim the glories of bhakti. But that night, the last night of Kartik, when Krishna left Srimati Radharani alone in the forest, and the gopis assembled and sang Hare Krishna as they usually would on the bank of Jamuna, and Krishna would always return. He did not return that night. The gopis stayed in the forest the next day, searching everywhere for Krishna. Nanda and Yashoda searched Nandagram. The gopas searched the pasturing grounds, but Krishna was nowhere to be found. And they began asking one another. Because all during that month of Kartik, if anybody ever said anything about somebody named Akrur, they said, don't go there. It was just a bad dream. That never happened. Krishna never left. Krishna would never leave Vrindavan. But now they were wondering, were we dreaming that Krishna came back? Were we dreaming that Krishna ever left? Are we living in the realm of a dream? Or are the interactions we have with Krishna, which we consider to be dreams or hallucinations, are they real? Or is the rest of life real? They cannot discriminate what's dream, what's reality. In other words, or in a similar way, they could not decipher between prakat, manifest, and aprakat, unmanifest lila of the Lord. And this is one of the main instructions that Krishna gave to Uddhava. Because Uddhava saw in Dwarka that clouds of gloom were spreading their influence over the city. And the Dwarkavasis were becoming sorrowful and ill-tempered and behaving improperly. And Krishna was entering into a deep and grave mood. So Uddhava, the very intelligent, wise minister amongst Krishna's courtiers, understood that it's not that the ill omens is due to a mood in Krishna or vice versa. Krishna is winding up his prakat lila. So he approached Krishna and he told him, I understand that you're about to conclude your lila in this world. I only have one request. Don't leave me behind. And Krishna told him, you're the only one who I am leaving behind. Everybody else is going with me. And as Uddhava burst into tears, he couldn't even see the Lord before him. But it was a short interaction, but very deep. Krishna instructed him, give up all their dharmas to simply follow in the footsteps of the gopis. Take sannyas and proclaim what you have witnessed in Vrindavan. First, the Brijavasis' love in separation, followed by their love in union, and how they dedicated everything exclusively for the pleasure of Govinda. You proclaim that message to the sages of Bhadrikasya. How could Uddhava have been torn away from the lotus feet of Krishna? How could he, royalty, walk on such a difficult pilgrimage where the slopes were growing steep and the rivers raging in the gorges and the slopes, the residences of sages and yogis, and he was thinking, this is intolerable. Where are the cows that are so conducive to remembrance of Krishna? And he was so exhausted, more emotionally than physically, he just sat down, and his consciousness was haunted by that last darshan of Krishna, telling him that in response to his plea, don't leave me behind. Krishna said, you're the only one I am leaving behind. Why? To proclaim Krishna's message, actually the message of the Vrijavasis, to the sages of Bhadrikasya. He was so tormented by his last darshan with Krishna, who took everyone home, leaving only him behind, that the anguish was so unbearable that he was literally forced to take shelter in the remembrance of the mellows of Vrindavan. And then he remembered the dancing cows, the resounding kirtan, the moonlit nights of Kartik. And he entered into it. And then he began to contemplate Krishna's instructions, because he asked him, is Prakat and Aprakat Lila, do they ever merge back into one? And Krishna said, they can't merge into one because they're never separate. It's a different perception only to conditioned souls that there is a manifest and unmanifest presence of the Lord. To the Vrijavasis, Krishna's always present. He's present in their dreams, which they take to be hallucinations or imagination. And they live by that remembrance of Krishna. Furthermore, Krishna lives by the love that is lavished upon him by the Vrijavasis in the interactions which they take to be dreams or hallucinations. So Uddhava is contemplating Krishna's instructions, because now he had no other shelter. And then when he would oscillate between the anguish of Krishna's departure and the ecstasy of the mellows of Vrindavan, Krishna expanding himself to be beside each and every cow, asking them, mothers, did you miss me as much as I missed you? And they all said, and danced with their heels kicking in the air, oscillating between that anguish and that ecstasy. And how he ever reached Bhadrikashram, and what he might have said to the sages there and beyond, that the love of Vrindavan was proclaimed to the world, he was not even aware. Until one day, he found himself again in the wide, ornate streets of Dwarka, hearing the sounds of the waves crashing on the shore, exchanging friendly, loving words with the jadus on the street, and hearing the rumbling of chariot wheels as the four steeds came before him, and the driver of that chariot asked in a sweet voice, sweeter than honey, my cousin, where were you? We must go to Vrindavan immediately. I was looking for you everywhere. I couldn't find you. Where were you? And Uddhava began to go, where was I? And he boarded the chariot. And Taruka drove. And on the outskirts of Vrindavan, they stopped beneath the tree. And Krishna took off his crown and his royal robes and put down his insignia and put on the yellow dhoti and the flute that Uddhava had prepared to him. And as Taruka spurred the horses on, he didn't even need to steer them. They knew the way. And before them, they heard resounding through the hills and plains of Braj, the kirtan, so sweet, so enchanting, so joyful. Is that because Satyabhama sent a message? She did. And the Brijabasis received it. And they knew Krishna was coming. But was that the real reason? Or was it the symphony of ecstatic mellows resounding from the hearts of all the Brijabasis? It wasn't a welcome party, because they were always ready to receive Krishna. They were just living on the hope that today Krishna will return. So on this Gopastami day, when Krishna graduated from the school of calf herd boy to become cow herd boy, but later, when he went on to become king of Dwarka, all he was thinking about was the cows. All night long, the queens would hear him calling the cows. And Madhu Mangal saw that my friend is in such anguish. What can I do for him to bring him pleasure? He thought, I'll take him to Govardhan. Because behind Rukmini's palace, through a flower-covered archway was the realm created by Vishwakarma named Nava Vrindavan. But Krishna never went there because there was no Brijabasis there. But after Satyabhama was given to Rukmini, she hid her in Nava Vrindavan because Satyabhama wanted... She requested that protect me from ever coming into contact with any man. So she sent her to Nava Vrindavan in exile, where she was very happy. And she gave her a nice yellow silk cloth when she exiled her to Nava Vrindavan with Navavrinda and Bakula. But Satyabhama was so morose at Nava Vrindavan. And Navavrinda Bakul said, what can we do to bring you pleasure? And when a slight smile played upon her lips, they said, what is it? She said, I used to have deities. And they sustained my life. He said, but there's a deity here in Navavrindavan. Come see. And they led her to a kunj where on a jeweled altar was the sapphire deity of Krishna. And Satyabhama ran to embrace the deity, but when she did, she said, Krishna, you become so hard. Is that due to association with your Kastubha Mani? Krishna, why aren't you speaking? And then she realized, this isn't Krishna, this is an emerald statue. But then she remembered the silk cloth and the flowers that just burst into bloom as she walked down the path. And her service during her residence in the sun of caring for the deities. So she dressed the deity with a silk cloth given by Rukmini. And the flowers she saw along the path. And then when she returned to the forest to get more flowers, it was when Madhu Mangal was leading Krishna to Govardhan Hill within Nava Vrindavan. And when they passed that kunj with the sapphire deity, they both turned. The deity has never looked so beautiful before. Who is the Pajari? And they looked, and it was clear that that deity was being served with such devotion and such emotion. They wanted to know who is the Pajari. So Krishna said, I have a plan. So Krishna exchanged his clothes and garlands and ornaments with the deity. And he said to Marumango, we'll hide the deity in the bushes and I'll stand on the altar. We'll see who comes. Marumango was ecstatic. He was dancing around. They hid the deity in the bushes. And Krishna stood on the altar wearing the deity's clothes and garlands and playing on his flute. And then when Satyabhama came back to finish decorating the deity with flowers, and she entered the kunj, and Krishna felt, it's as if there's Brijabasis again in Nava Vrindavan, and he turned his glance to look. And then Satyabhama said, the deity is now casting sidelong glances. And Navavrinda said to Bukul, because Bukul confirmed, and Navavrinda said, you know, by the influence of Satyabhama, you're hallucinating too. He is! And then they went before the deity. And when the deity saw Satyabhama, he began to shed tears. Said, this deity not only turned his gaze, but now he's crying. And she went to place the flowers upon him, and he began to tremble. And then Krishna was thinking that this is an illusory Radha, some kind of deity sculpted by Vishvakarma, but she's so real, she's so convincing. And she was thinking that this deity is becoming more and more lifelike at every moment. So she asked him, O deity of Krishna, is my Lord happy? And the deity said, O illusory Radha, at this minute, your Lord is most happy. And she turned back to Bakul and Navavrinda and said, he not only looks at us, he not only shed tears, but now he speaks. Is this what deities normally do? And then when she reached up to decorate him with the flowers, and he fell into a swoon and had to lean against a tree behind him, Satyabhama turned to Navavrinda and said, he's alive! And then she fainted in ecstasy, and they heard the peacocks squawking, because Rukmini was suspecting something. So then Marumango jumped out of the bush and said, my friend, We have to put the deity back on the altar. And then they scrambled to get the deity and put him back. And Krishna began changing clothes with the deity as fast as he could, but not fast enough because Rukmini came in. What? And she asked, Madhavi, what are they doing? So they finished dressing the deity real quickly, and then, you know, Krishna just leaned on Marumango. Oh, the queen is here. Said, oh, noble husband, what are you doing? What do you mean? There's nothing out of the ordinary. And she looked at the garland. Said, somebody made that garland with great artistic skill and devotion. I said, that was Marumango. I said, yes. I said, and that silk dhoti with all the fine embroidery, that was Marumango. Also, Marumango, he protruded his chest, was just about to boast about his embroidery skills when Krishna, no, this was the gift from the goddess of the forest. Said Krishna, have you met a new lover? And he said, don't you mean an old lover? She said, what do you mean? He said, Vrindavan Forest. And then Rukmini lost her composure and said, Krishna! And he said, oh, that name gives me so much pleasure, much more than your usual, oh, my noble husband. So Krishna's final instructions to Uddhava was that the demarcation between prakat and aprakat lila is only in the eyes of sadhakas. For the siddhas, they're always in Krishna's association. He appears in their dreams, which they take to be hallucinations or imaginations. And he lives. He sustains his life while in Mathura and Dwarka. And there's also cows in Mathura and Dwarka, but Krishna is thinking these are not like the Brijavasi cows. Krishna maintains his life while he's bound by the ropes of duty. He's more captivated by the ropes of affection, and therefore Satyavrata Muni, in the conclusion of his Dhammadharastikam, offers his obeisances to that rope which binds Dhammadhar by the waist, from which he cannot escape. And then he offers his obeisances to Srimati Radharani, who does not need a rope, but with a thread of her love keeps him forever bound in the mellows of Vrindavan. So today, when Krishna graduated and became full-fledged cowherd boy, we should contemplate what really pleases Krishna. How can we approach Krishna? Only by the intercession of those who are very dear to Krishna can we return to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada is that ambassador from the spiritual sky who, during the month of Kartik, was being called back home. But he told us while he was here in New Vrindavan, you don't know how fortunate you are. You have this land. You have the cows. You have Sri Shivada Vrindavan Chandra. And then in a very grave but sweet mood, he repeated, you don't know how fortunate you are. So, Kartik is the month, the king of months, the month of Damodar, whose queen is Srimati Radharani. And everything during this month is meant to please her. Because where is Krishna to be found? In his most complete form, Yuga Kishore. Krishna is only complete when he is with Srimati Radharani. And this is the month when we observe the sadhana which awakens the desire to serve Srimati Radharani, because no one can understand his heart or satisfy it as she does. And that's why, before even reaching western shores, aboard Jaladuta, after observing Janmastami, Vyas Puja, and Radhastami at sea, and just nearly, barely escaping death by his own pure and powerful will and the desire of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada revealed his heart in his invocation to his message to the West. O brothers, I emphatically say to you, You will obtain your good fortune from the Supreme Lord Krishna only when Srimati Radharani becomes pleased with you. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments about cows?
Speak up.
I was helping herd the cows today, and I really didn't understand the relationship Krishna had with the cows, like more so than until I actually got to work with the cows, actually meet the cows and like interact with them, and having served the devotees and also the cows in that way, I feel like I have like a stronger connection with Krishna actually, and more understanding of how important they are to Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada said that the barometer for the spiritual health of society is how much the cows and bulls are jolly. But what is it about cows? They take the least and give the most. They take some grass, which needs to be cut anyway, and they produce the miracle food. The only nutrition which nourishes the finer brain tissues, enabling us to understand the nature of Krishna in the process to please him.
I feel it would really be nice if it, every person in the community, like, if they've never met a cow, if they should go experience meeting the cow.
Well, if you're talking about actual culture, no one can be admitted as a true Brijabasi unless they've spent at least a year serving cows. This is the noble occupation. Krishna, Krishna. Whenever anyone is about to embark on the last journey to the final destination, it's a very fearful experience, and therefore it is the duty. I mean, Lord Chaitanya explained it himself when he was a young child to his mother on the imminent disappearance of Jagannath Mishra. He said, it is the duty of family and friends to come together to assist a loved one departing for his next destination by engaging in Sankirtan. And imparting the message that you're not leaving on an aimless journey where there won't be anybody to greet you at your next destination. There will be somebody there. And that assurance facilitates that last transition. So by resounding by filling the atmosphere with the sound of Krishna's name, we encourage the soul to the destination where Krishna will be awaiting to receive them on the other end.
His Holiness Prasada Maharaj Ki.
Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Now we'll have a Dhamma Dharasvaka and then some stuff.